Have you done your Christmas shopping yet?
Christmas is months away, but at a farm in Columbia and another in Twain Heart, they are preparing for Christmas today. In fact, they prepare nearly every day of the year. These farms grow Christmas trees, and there's a lot more to it than just sticking a seedling in the ground and watching it grow. Growing Christmas trees, like growing any other crop, requires knowledge gained from experience, physical effort, and benevolent treatment from nature. Preparations are made year-round for the frantic three-week selling period between Thanksgiving and the last weekend before Christmas. The Christmas tree has not always been the symbol of Christmas it is today. In medieval Scandinavia, evergreen trees were brought into the house and decorated at the winter solstice. 16th century Germans also brought trees into their homes and decorated them with apples, nuts, and cookies. Germans brought this tradition to Pennsylvania, but the Puritans of New England thought this to be a pagan activity. It was not until Prince Albert, the German-born husband of Queen Victoria, brought the tradition to the royal household, did the Christmas tree receive legitimacy. And it was not until Thomas Edison, wanting to prove the safety of electric lights, did the tradition of colored light on a Christmas tree become fashionable. There are about 35 million Christmas trees sold in the United States each season, and 98% of those trees are grown on tree farms. There are farms in every state in the Union, including Hawaii, but 25% of the trees sold come from Oregon. So let's drive out Italian Bar Road to Bramble Hill Tree Farm and talk with Rick Ulvavadit about the life of Christmas trees from January to November. Well, this is nice. It got a little rain last night. It's damp and cool morning, and everything's green and fresh. So I'm looking out at about, how many acres have we got out here in trees?
There's probably 6.5 acres of trees out here, so 7.
There's some small ones here and larger ones.
They're all interplanted. We don't section anything off, so when there's a spot for a tree, we just replant. So this is a choose and cut farm, which a lot of people might be aware of, but this is where you come out and you cut the tree. So that's a big draw. Some farms you don't cut the tree, we just give the customer a saw, and if they find a tree, we just let them loose with a saw, they come back with a tree and they pay us. They seem to like that, but this is kind of a mom and pop operation. Family helps out. I got a couple of hired hands during Christmas tree season to help customers with their trees, to get them in and tie them down and all that. That's how that works. They get candy canes, kids get coloring books, and we give away mistletoe. We usually have some tree stands here. We raise pomegranates and persimmons, so those are available. A lot of people like to use those in their cooking and Christmas stuff. So that's what we do.
I noticed there's a stump there with a new tree growing out of it. That one's about 3 feet high now. The stump looks like it might be about 4 inches across.
Yeah.
How long would it take for that new tree to develop to be harvested?
That tree right there, it'll probably be a couple more years. Some of my stumps with the sequoias, you get a tree in like 4 years, a new tree off of a stump in 4. The sequoia is very fast growing.
Do you have very many sequoias here?
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of sequoias.
Okay. You do plant new trees. Not all of your trees are growing from...
Well, yeah. Stump culture is not really my specialty here. Most of the time, we're going to plant seedlings. We start replanting normally 1st of February, and I'll get like 3 shipments in. I do most of the planting myself, so... I don't get them all at once, but I'll plant 1,500, 2,000 trees every year. A lot of those do not survive. And I'm always trying new trees, new varieties, and trying to find, you know, the magic bullet tree. But that's part of the fun of having a tree farm. You get to try different varieties and see what works, what doesn't.
So if you plant a seedling, then how long would that take before it's harvested?
The average is, I just say 7 years. There's trees out here that have been out here a lot longer than that. But on average, if you get a good tree in a good spot, it's going to be about 7 years. It's a long-term commitment when you plant a seedling.
Do you have to dig the stumps out?
Some people will dig their stumps out, but this farm is on a hillside. You can't get in here with a tractor. Everything basically is done by hand. A farm with that a tractor could get to, you could grind stumps out or pull them out, but we don't do that here. They just rot out. It's January. I get out here with a chainsaw. I cut my stumps out. Like, there'll be a bushy one, like right here. There's a sequoia where you have a stump where it's sprouting out. So you have to try to thin it out to one tree. This one I haven't done. So what we're looking at is one primary tree that I would work with here. It's a nice leader. So I would cut this out with a chainsaw and I'd cut all this other growth out. In January, that's what we're doing. In February, we're planting. Then we do a lot of weed abatement in March. And then in June, we're looking at starting to do our trimming. So every one of these trees has to be sheared. Any tree that's basically 4 feet high is sheared.
When you say sheared, are you trimming to shape it?
Yes, they're shaped. And you can see here's a Scotch pine. We're looking at a very bushy Scotch pine. The leader on it is 2 feet tall, so it's got 2 feet of new growth. So we're going to trim that back. We would trim this leader back 18 inches, and all these are trimmed back. This thing is way too wide. People don't understand, but if you leave these trees alone for a couple years, they're unmarketable. So they always have to be sheared once a year.
And once you cut this leader, the tree will not get any taller.
Right. What we try to do is we wait till June when all the growth is completed. So I wait till the Douglas fir are ready. And when they're ready, then everything gets trimmed. The sequoia, the Douglas fir, I've got white fir, I've got cedar, I've got the Nordman fir. So everything is trimmed at the same time.
Which is your most popular tree?
I sell probably more Douglas fir than anything, and they simply grow better here. The Douglas fir meets the market need here for the choose and cut industry. I call it my bread and butter tree, is the Douglas fir.
Once you've trimmed this tree back, or once you've done all the shaping, that's month of June. What else do you have to do after the shaping in July, August, September?
There's just a lot of weed abatement going on. That's the main thing. I do irrigate. These trees get water all the time. The trees get water about once every 10 days or so. So they get some water. And then when we get around to selling season, we're getting the farm ready for a lot of visitors. So that takes quite a bit of work. Our selling season starts the Friday after Thanksgiving, and I'm usually open till second or third weekend in December.
It's just a few weekends.
Yeah.
3 or 4 weekends?
Three big weekends, usually. We had a great year in 2016, and we were sold out in 3 weekends. All the farms in up and down the foothills were swamped, so we had quite a brisk season this year. We had pretty good weather. The weather doesn't cooperate, you're in trouble. If it snows, we're really in trouble out here. We don't have the equipment to get it cleared, and we're kind of in a remote area. So
when it snows, that discourages customers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, some people want to come out in the snow, though. They'll be here, but it's a challenge. We've had some interesting times when it snowed, but we're only at 2,500 feet, so we don't get that much snow. We're only 2 miles out of Columbia.
So you have 3 weekends. About how many customers would you have? How many people do you have to accommodate in that short a time?
Oh, at least a couple hundred a weekend. Limitation here is our parking.
The end of December, then everything shuts down and...
December is marketing. January is the stumping, where you have a lot of stuff to remove, a lot of material. And also I'll cull trees at that time. Trees that I don't think will ever become a decent tree, I'll cut them out. February we're planting. March, April we're doing a lot of weed abatement. June we're trimming. Summer is tough on these trees. They probably wouldn't survive here without the irrigation.
Are you on the ditch?
Yeah, we use the ditch. That's the only thing we could water with. The wells out here are pretty minimal. So irrigation is dependent on the ditch system.
What's the biggest problem that you might have? Doesn't seem to be a pest problem, and deer won't be nibbling on your...
Well, the one good advantage I have now is deer cannot come in here. For years they could, and the bucks would come in here in the rut, and they would come in and they do extensive damage to these trees, and it was very frustrating, but I finally got the fencing up, and they don't get in here. So that was a big problem. Insects have never been a problem for me here. I know that people that grow a lot of Monterey pine, they have some stuff going on, but we don't grow Monterey pine here anymore. I did have Monterey pine here, planted 500 of them. They all did fine, but they just weren't selling as well as what I can grow here. So that experiment ended probably 20 years ago. So we've been here since 1987. So I've been here for over 30 years doing it. The Monterey pine does have some pest issues, and it's controllable, but we don't have to spray anything for bugs here. That makes it nice.
Let's wander in a little bit deeper. I get the impression here that the customers get about this far because beyond us, the trees are larger than the other direction back towards us.
I always tell people, they want to know where all the good trees are. I go, well, the further back you go, the better the trees. But I said, you got to carry them further. And if it's bad weather, people will tend to cut real close to the parking lot.
And no soil amendment other than what you get?
Yeah, I don't do any fertilizing. You know, we're looking at quite a few mulch piles from our goat operation that will be spread around the trees. We have piles of them, but that's about it.
Well, it's real nice out here. It's real nice out here this morning with this overcast. It's nice and cool. I'd like to come out in December and walk through the trees then. Well, there's a lot more to it than just putting a tree in the ground and then waiting. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
We'll come out at Christmas time and
yeah,
talk to the goat. Jump in my sleigh to my team, give a whistle, and head back to Sonora. Out Tuolumne Road, past the casino, to Twain Hart Tree Farm, where Don Moore's been growing Christmas tree for about 40 years. Good morning, Don. Good morning, Chloe. Chloe?
Chloe, yeah.
Chloe, you going to bark for us, Chloe?
Our good ranch dog, Chloe.
One little bark? No? Now that you're on the radio, you don't want to bark.
Yeah.
How long have you been here, Don? You got a nice Christmas tree farm here.
My folks bought this property, this ranch, in 1951, so I got to grow up here. It was a beautiful opportunity. They wanted to give my brother, I've got one brother, my brother and I, a farm experience, and we had a farm experience with horses and cows and pigs and chickens, and actually stuck more with my brother, I guess. He went into FFA, went to college as an ag engineer. I did FFA for 1 year and decided I like animals and the outdoors, but I didn't see that as my path forward. Christmas tree farm that we started in 1972, my father said that he and my mom were thinking about selling the ranch because it was so much work. He didn't have the time to do his contracting business, and it was expensive to maintain the ranch and all things that need to be done. And I said, whoa, I'll figure out some way to earn some income so that we could maintain it and keep the property. And so when we started thinking about Christmas trees, it just seemed natural that we're at the tree elevation for white fir and Doug fir. And so in 1972 decided that's what we should do. So we ordered Christmas trees, and we had a pasture that we had plowed up and converted. We're going to convert to the initial Christmas tree plantation. I guess we'd read a brochure or two about how to plant Christmas trees, and somehow, I don't know if he was a county ag commissioner or a forester, someone came out to kind of see how we're doing, and lo and behold, we were doing it all wrong, and not keeping the roots moist and covered, and we were actually planting too late because it was too late in the year to get some nice spring rain. So of the first year's planting, a very few survive. You know, over the next few years, like most experiences, you learn every year something a little bit better about how to do things and talk to other people. And so it was a slow start. I think we sold our first few trees in, I think it was 1977, after about 6 years. And if I recall, we sold 15 or 20 trees the first year. We were off and running. Probably within 5 to 10 years, we had planted about 5 acres. Each year had more trees available to sell, and so had, I don't know the numbers, but you know, maybe sold 50 and then sold 75 and gradually increased. Somewhere along there, after 10 or 15 years, I believe, my wife Peggy decided that we ought to have a gift shop. So we converted a small saddle room we had in the barn as a gift shop. Some of the early idea was to get a lot of handcrafted Christmas items. And I remember in the early years, someone had packaged beans. We said, well, that would be a great idea to cook some and have them for sampling. And so for a number of those early years, you know, besides having coffee, apple cider, and some little cookies or something, we had beans to sample, and that was a big hit. People thought they were great. And what we didn't sell, that would be our dinner. We'd have beans at the end of the day. So year by year, increasing the number of trees, the varieties of trees. At some point, we ended up with Doug fir, white fir, incense cedar, which are native here, and planted some of those, giant sequoias. In total, we've got about 9 acres of Christmas trees.
What is the elevation here?
We figure we're about 3,500 foot elevation.
What kind of wildlife is there?
Unfortunately for us, there's a lot of deer in the area. In fact, over the past decade or so, as the climate seems to have warmed, we're getting deer year-round now. So we have a lot of deer now, and the young bucks rub their horns on our soft Christmas trees to get the felt off of them when they're going through that phase. And so that's been a problem. They've actually damaged a number of trees enough that we just had to cut them out.
So it's quite a habitat, the Christmas tree farm itself, with all the trees. It's probably got a few thousand trees, several thousand trees.
Yeah, it's theoretically max trees. If every tree survived and we had 100% in 9 acres, we could have up to 18,000 trees. But like I say, some die. We're replanting just about every year. We didn't replant during the 5 years of drought we've just come out of. This year, 2017, planted 1,400 trees for the first time in 5 years because of a nice wet winter and the better, decent chance that they're going to survive, where, like I say, during the drought years, we didn't plant any. We plant them as 2-year-olds, which are about a foot tall. Like I say, it takes 8 to 9 years for the fir in particular to grow to a 7-foot tree. That's the idea of replanting every year, is you always have, while you're selling the taller ones, you've got younger ones coming along. So if you walk out, you're going to see trees in the plantations anywhere from, you know, brand new seedlings a foot tall up to, you know, now we're selling the redwoods in particular for people's homes. We often sell trees now up to 15, 20 foot tall. For 2 years, we actually sold, I think one was up to 45 foot tall to Castle Air Force Base. The last 2 years, Castle Air Force Base was in existence. They brought up a big Air Force flatbed truck, and my dad and I, one of us was driving the tractor and one driving a forklift that he had, was able to load it onto theirs. So that's kind of our record big tree sales. We always open the day after Thanksgiving, and we're open that weekend, and then afternoons 12 to 4:30 Monday through Friday the next 2 weeks, and the following 2 weekends is our normal full season. So I remember as a kid going up and down McHenry Avenue where the outdoor tree lots were. You'd go by for, I guess we'd go down occasionally for after Christmas sales, and you'd see piles and piles of trees. And So the concept of having a choose and cut farm that you cut it fresh, the people know it's fresh, it's not cut a month or two early and shipped in and all the needles drop, that the fact that they can come out as a family outing and get to pick their tree among all that you have.
Do you have very many repeat customers? You must see some same families every Christmas.
Yeah. We've got multiple families that have been back 20, 25. We've got a few that have been with us for 30 plus years. And even though you only see them once a year, they're like family. It's a wonderful part of the experience. In the early 70s and 80s, families would bring their kids, and then in the 80s and 90s, they'd bring their grandkids, and now we've got their grandkids bringing their kids. Get to see multiple generations, and it's a fun part of the whole process.
Well, I know that you also do weddings here, but you haven't always done weddings.
No, somewhere in the late 90s, some of our friends had a couple of girls that were at college level and, you know, kind of that, oh, thinking about, you know, I'm going to be married someday or something. And their parents commented to us, man, your place would just be lovely to have a wedding. And so that kind of planted the seeds around 2000, maybe 1998, 99, we had our first wedding. Sort of like the Christmas tree business, it's kind of evolved. And each year we try and make some improvement and plant a few more plants or shrubs or trees to beautify the area, even though just the natural beauty of the wedding sites with all the pine trees and the foliage we have, it's turned out to be a popular place. We will book weddings in June, July, and August. Have decided that we cut off the first weekend in September. We will have that, but because after that it gets dark real early, and one of our restrictions is we can't go late into the night. It's basically a short summer season, if you will, and we have typically six or seven weddings during the summer, a normal summer. It turned out to be just a fun experience, a happy occasion for the family when they're cutting a Christmas tree, obviously a happy occasion for the family when there's a marriage, so we feel blessed to be able to offer two activities, sharing our ranch with people, that are fun family experiences.
Did you have much trouble getting permitting from the county?
Yeah. The Christmas tree farm was not a problem because early on my father put the ranch into the Williamson Act. In the Williamson Act, you're supposed to be able to get a reduced tax benefit for your ranch property. So when we decided that we'd like to do the weddings, we had to go through the county and request a permit to add that to the Williamson Act and get permission. And I guess like all activities on your property, that to be permitted, that the county notifies all your neighbors within 200 yards of one of your boundaries or whatever it is, basically anyone who surrounds you, that this is what you're intending to do, and if they have any objections, they have a chance to voice those. We had to go before the county supervisors because there was lots of people that thought we were going to have wild parties and all-night activities and traffic issues and, you know, all sorts of concerns. And so we had to go before the Board of Supervisors, as I said, and a few neighbors said, hey, it sounds like a great idea to me. But so as a result of those hearings, the county put some mitigating circumstances, like we had to have a wider driveway entrance so that if fire trucks needed to get down here, they could come in, and the driveway down had to have some turnout so the traffic could pass, and that we couldn't go late at night so that you know, no music or loud activities could be after 9 o'clock at night, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise because we particularly don't want late night parties, but you know, we'll do the wedding activity, and so that's turned out to be a good thing. So like I say, we've been happy with it. And I think the early concerns of the neighbors were not justified. And in fact, we don't get any complaints at this point. And in fact, a few neighbors say we enjoy the weddings because we can sit out on our porch and hear some of the music while we're having a glass of wine or something. So again, another way to have a little income off of the property that helps us keep the place in the family and paint the buildings and pave the road and, you know, do all the maintenance things that are required of a piece of property.
It's difficult to keep agricultural land in agriculture, and any way that you can augment your income helps to keep ag land in agriculture. We're sitting here in the wedding venue, and I could practically fall asleep here. It's so quiet and peaceful and shaded, cool. I'm going to come out here the first weekend after Thanksgiving and walk around and look at the trees and see the happy families at Christmas time and get a glass of cider.
Cider.
I enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for talking with me.
That mentions, let me add one thing, is that our biggest day is always the first day, day after Thanksgiving, because people like to come out and get first pick. And not only the first day, but the first 3 days, that first weekend, we are absolutely swamped those 3 days. The last number of years, we sell out quite early. And we try and get that word out. We have a website and a Facebook page now that we try and post information about weather, and if we have to close, we post it there. And I think we've encouraged most of our customers to check there before they come out.
Very good. Thank you again, Don.
You're quite welcome.
We're back in the dusty shade of the barn. It's good to get out of the heat and let the water, sun, and soil do the work for a while. Sit down on that hay bale over there, knock the dirt off your boots, and have a glass of cool water before you go. But come back again sometime and see what's growing on the farms of Tuolumne County.